You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about overcoming disaster in business. We leave our Julian, California business series and head east across the Arizona border to the city of Glendale. Here, Rick and Judy walked into the history and stayed at the Gaslight Inn Bed and Breakfast. Learn how Teresa Outzen and her husband, Pete Gliniak, went from a heartbreaking business venture to a successful and popular bed and breakfast. That's a really good story.
Yeah.
A lot of people have to, you know, a lot of people will close out after there's something bad happens.
Yeah, wonderful.
I'm glad they didn't. Stay tuned, of course, for our tax tales and business takeaways coming up.
Teresa Outzen and Peter Gliniak try to start a bed and breakfast in downtown Covina, California. Not West Covina.
Yeah. And not Glendale, California.
Right. I mean, a lot of people know of West Covina, especially since my crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's West Covina.
But a lot of people don't know where Covina is because I don't think it's next to the freeway, but I'm not sure.
I'm guessing it's
east of Covina. Good guess. They approached it, though, from a point of view of a restorator. You know, that's what they did. They usually go to old homes, and they restore them to their original state. And you see that a lot on TV.
Yeah.
But this isn't like the fixer-uppers and the flippers. These are people that are trying to restore it to its historical.
Yeah, so a little thing. More...
Yeah.
A little more academic, rather than...
Yeah, you really think about it a little bit longer. So they started from a construction point of view to restore an old home, and this time into a bed and breakfast, which she always wanted to do. It was her big dream. So the city, though, you know, Covina, was kind of at a loss because they didn't have any B&Bs at this time.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so she had to go to the city and change the ordinances, which is very similar that we heard in Haiku.
Yeah, when we did that bed and breakfast at the plantation.
Maui. But the difference is that in Maui, Haiku, when she went to try to do the ordinances, she was getting a lot of pushback from the politicians who were getting pushback from the hotels.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, so Covina wasn't like that. She was actually able to... get the ordinances in so she could start the renovating of this old, excellent place into a B&B. So they spent 5 months restoring baseboards and crown molding and, you know, stripping all the floors and, you know, putting in a new roof and ceiling and resealing. They had 35 people on the job, and she said it was like the main attraction in the city. You know, people would drive by and stop and just watching the, almost like a HDTV program going on in your own city.
Yeah.
And you're watching it and you're going, wow, what's going on today? Hey, look what they're doing here. I wonder what it's going to look like, and all these excited people. And one of the things they discovered over there, they discovered Murphy beds.
That's fun.
Yeah, which, you know, those are beds that are hidden in the walls.
Yeah.
And they had to look for new mattresses. And I kind of checked up on William Murphy. He actually was in San Francisco in 1900, and he was wooing this opera singer, and he wanted to bring her to his place, but it was against moral code to bring a single woman to your bedroom.
Okay.
And he had a one studio place that had the bedroom and the living room in the same room.
Yeah.
So he couldn't entertain anybody there, couldn't entertain women or anything like that. So he figured out how to put the bed up on the wall.
So it wouldn't count as
that. That's right. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Which, of course, created the well-known adage, where there is a Willie, there's a way.
Okay. I don't think that's real.
Anyway, they did a bunch of things. They had anti-glass on the structure there in Covina. And they had the roof. They had all packed up. You know, when you do roof, especially when you're doing stucco or something on the side, you always put the material of the roof first to keep the weight down as they're putting up stucco. I don't know if they were doing stucco.
Otherwise, it would shift after you put it
exactly,
down.
Yeah. But I don't know if they were doing stucco. But they had all the stuff loaded up there, and then it burnt to the ground.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
After they did all that work and found all these cool things.
She said it was the worst possible time because it was sanded down. It was like a box of timber.
Yeah,
ready to go.
Tinder, I think.
Tinder.
A house is mostly a box of timber.
Tinder.
It's built out of wood.
So I asked her, I said, well, what caused it? She said, you know, the city never did give us a report. They didn't know. They couldn't figure it out. It was a total loss. I mean, she said down to the ground. Everything was gone. There's a hot fire. So, you know, it was obviously devastating. This was a dream. And, you know, you've been doing this for 5 months. You're just looking at the progress every day. And, you know, people are listening to this podcast may have gone through this kind of thing where you just work so hard at something and some disaster hits.
Yeah.
You know, and then what do you do? You know, where, how do you pick it up and go? So, you know, they still wanted to own a B&B. You know, for 20 years, they've been wanting to own a B&B and kind of wonder where they kind of designed themselves. So it took them about a year, and they kind of switched gears and kind of got a little more optimism back into their heart.
Yeah, they had to get over the grief.
Yeah. It's like any other loss. Mm-hmm. They happened to head over to Arizona on a little trip because someone had told them about Superstitious Mountains. She read it in Sunset Magazine, actually. And also the NFL plays over there. You know, the Cardinals play over there. And also is that the area has baseball training seasons. They have, I think, 7 teams that train.
Oh, yeah, the spring training. All the West Coast people go there.
And Devin just went there.
He did.
That was his birthday present from Satya, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they went to this area, and they were kind of directed to the historic part of Glendale, and they couldn't find what they were looking for. They were looking for the historic part, which is this—it's like 5-square box of this historic thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And we saw it when we were there. And they were walking down the main street, and they saw a small little for sale sign on a building on the glass, and it was this old retro building, this vintage place, and they went, wow, this looks really interesting. And they found out that it was converted into a 10-room bed and breakfast.
Already?
Yeah. So she called her dad, who lived in Arizona, and asked him to go out there and check it out, you know, to talk to the owner and check it out, and asked him if he'd be willing to go in with them as partners on restoring it. And so he went out there, and he liked it, and she bought it sight unseen.
Wow.
Trusting on him. Apparently he has,
because they couldn't get in when they were there.
Right. Apparently he had some knowledge. Yeah. So he liked it, and they bought it in the year 2011. And the interesting thing is they really didn't have to do too much renovation. You know, when you're doing renovation, the stuff that really gets into money is things like foundation, structural stuff, redoing all the electrical, mm-hmm. you know.
Lead, dealing with lead.
Yeah, lead paints, stuff
with
like that.
With old buildings.
I know. So what they did is they took this 1926 building, and they took care of the floors to make it more of a vintage style. The floors were stained too light. Hmm. And they said they don't have light floors back in 1926. Everything was dark.
Yeah.
And so they did it like a darker, you know, floors, which I love the floors. They were great. I mean, you go into a lot of these homes that are built in California like last week, and they will do these the distressed wood. Mm-hmm. You know how it's like bumpy?
The fake barn wood.
Well, no, the distressed wood is like, well, you're right. There's distressed wood, but they distress the floor where they take big, huge blades and they carve
Of uneven.
Yeah, makes it uneven. So you walk across, you feel different things. It's kind of like, oh, this is a, you know, it's like an old place, you know.
But obviously it's not.
No. It was just built on El Segundo 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't have to do that. It was already like that. It was really cool. And I could test that because I was there. You know, I walked on those floors, you know, creaking every 3 steps, you know. It's pretty cool, you know, as you walk up and down those hallways. So they went through the whole thing, and she went through the rooms, the 10 rooms. Every room had this kind of like a dresser, but it wasn't a dresser with drawers. It was like a dresser that was open. You hang clothes on it.
Like a wardrobe.
Yeah, but it's really small. It was like only about 3 feet high, and there was a microwave sitting on top of it.
Hmm.
She said it was the butt ugliest thing you'd ever seen. And she said, we had to get that out of there because it was over the floor, and it just looked terrible. They pulled it out and realized that the floor wasn't under it. They had put the floor in around this thing.
Oh, geez.
So what they did is they went into some of the closets, and they started pulling up boards, and they started replacing the patches in all these rooms, which I told her. I said, now I'm going to go up there. I'm going to look for it.
Yeah.
So she said, well, you got an armoire in your room. Every room has an armoire now, a big nice
one,
antique
yeah.
armoire type thing. And so, which was really cool, we hung our clothes. And it made it look really cool. Now, one thing she realized, though, is that there was a very interesting ceiling. And it was very decorative. And that's the first thing I noticed. The ceilings were like a copper etching. They were like, if you took a...
like the pressed, like tin
yes,
ceiling.
Yeah. So, and they were all covered. The ceilings were all covered with that. And she talked to the guy who actually renovated the place in 1989. And he said that actually came from the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas when they were tearing it down.
Oh, wow.
And he went there and he just took it all, bought it, and took it all with him.
That's the thing with builders. Our Uncle Andy.
Yeah, that's right. We got that big, huge chandelier.
That they were going to throw away.
And the sconces that we have from 1929.
Yeah, yeah.
House. Yeah.
Repurposing old stuff is a great thing.
Yeah, it really looks great.
They really don't make them like they used to.
Yeah. And so the one thing, though, is that there was a room that you enter from the street next door that when we were there was called Room 11. And it was kind of like just a beer and wine bar type thing. And it had a sunken ceiling in that. And it had no plumbing in it at all. And she wanted to turn it into something. And so they started taking out the ceiling and the pressed copper tin things were there too.
Oh.
So it was a hidden thing. Another treasure that was found.
The treasure underneath the dirt.
Found. Yeah. So they did that. They put in all the plumbing and it's called Room 11 because they have 10 rooms in their B&B.
Yeah. This is Room 11. The 11th, yeah.
You know, I didn't even think about that till just now.
Oh, no.
I was there. I didn't even think about, they call it Room
11. How much wine did you have?
I don't remember.
There's your problem.
What they also did in there is they bought a 100-year-old antique bar from Atlanta, Georgia and had it shipped out. Now, they may have had it shipped out in... two or three pieces. I don't remember. Your mom kind of might remember that, but
you can put it on a train and you can.
I don't know. Lots of things come apart because they're not exactly boxed. They curved. This one curved. So it was. So it was a really cool place to go. We went there one night. Now, what made this place so neat, as I said, they have 4 sports stadiums, 8 baseball spring training camps that bring people in seasonally. So during this time when Devin went down there, you can't find a place to stay. It's just packed with people. And she says the people are really cool. She says they all know their teams. And when I was in there, I said, yeah, I saw that. I saw a picture. I saw a signature baseball from Manny Mota from the Dodgers up on the wall on a case. And I said, isn't that kind of dangerous to have that in Phoenix where the D-backs play? She said, no, because we got all these teams that have farm teams that are here that are playing. The Dodgers have their farm team here. So one other thing they added, your mom noticed, is they added an afternoon tea service that was not only open to the people of the residents, but also open to the public. You pay, I don't know what it was, I think your mom said like $20, $25. And Teresa was telling me that she went to a tea time up at some Empress Castle. It was like $100 or something like that.
Wow. That's a lot of money for little sandwiches.
Yeah, I know. So it's a bargain, and they get a lot of people coming in, a lot of women's groups from all over the nation in clubs that come into that place. So they've really have taken this terrible situation of watching their dream go up in smoke and turning it around into creating even a better place in another state.
If you want to learn more about the Gaslight Inn and Bed and Breakfast, go to www.gaslightinaz.com. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
And the people in the Gaslight Inn building may have done a little bit of gambling back in the day, especially with all the stuff from the Sands. that leftover luck.
That was a gamble.
Yeah.
But he has a gamble for him to buy that.
Exactly. But the patrons probably didn't have to pay taxes for their gambling. In 1710 in England, they increased their tax on playing cards and dice to basically tax gambling because it was so popular.
Yeah.
This led to widespread forgeries of playing cards. So people would write up their own cards rather than buy the approved government ones to avoid the tax.
How did they make those little wagon wheels on there?
I don't know. Maybe they. Maybe that's why they did bicycle. It's two less wheels.
Oh, there it is.
You don't have to draw as many. The tax stood for 250 years until it was repealed. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Glendale, Arizona area.
When in Glendale, drive down to Tucson to see the 98-acre Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Did we take you there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because when we went down there, and I remember all those big saguaro cactuses.
And that's the same place where they also had the ICBM missile silo.
Remember
that?
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, it was the same day. So, yeah, that's the place where you can see the saguaro cacti that we only see in cartoons. Whenever they have a cactus.
Yeah, the typical cactus that Yosemite Sam would be standing next to.
Yeah, and all the little kids are going, that's a cactus? I don't see him. All I see is prickly pear.
Prickly pear, the little barrel ones.
Right. Well, the little barrel ones, right. So, you know, this is a really cool thing to see because some of them are so old.
They're hundreds.
Yeah, they're really old.
And they look like people because they have little folded arms.
That's right. Like you're being held up by a bandit or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, trip advisor. I get a call from travel advisor, or you get a travel tip advisor. Why'd you mention our competitor?
Yeah.
TripAdvisor ranks it among the top 10 museums in the country.
Yeah, and that missile silo was really cool. I mean, you got to go in and
go
into the control room that's on these giant springs.
Yeah, and that's not that far from there. I don't know how far it is, but that's pretty.
I think we did that in one day.
So. Yeah, we did. So check that out in Tucson.
Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. And the first thing to think about is, when recovering from a catastrophic business loss, you need to give yourself time to catch your breath. Don't make knee-jerk emotional decisions. Teresa and Pete didn't immediately jump into another venture. I mean, you know, they needed to take time to deal with that loss and you know, be able to think clearly, because you know, when you're grieving, you're not thinking in the most logical way.
After you have emotionally recovered, keep your eyes open. Teresa and Bill saw an opportunity a year later in another state when they least expected it. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be where relative lived, her dad.
The third thing to think about is, when an opportunity surfaces, look at it with your eyes wide open. The Gaslight Inn was already converted into a B&B and didn't need any structural repairs, so that was a good project, so they weren't having to sink a lot more money and time into, you know, doing crazy renovations on another place.
Yeah, I know. And it's, you know, the thing that they have to think about is relocating to another state, right? You know, about how they do that. That's
different,
the biggest
tax laws, different everything.
Yeah, it's all, you know, the friends you leave behind, something like that. So, and last, try to look for the hidden treasures that you come across. You know, you may come across something that looks very odd, but you know, that odd thing could be used to an advantage that sets you apart from your competitors. Like the Gaslight, they had these copper ceilings that were hidden. You know, instead of keeping the drop-dowel ceiling, they kept it open, and it's one of the first things I saw when I walked in there. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, if you're buying an old building, you're buying it for its charm and its character, so you don't want to mess with that. Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. We have an email from Jack who asks, I have an eBay business in California. Do I have to charge sales tax for selling things online?
Well, Jack, you said the magic word, California.
Yep.
Because California charges sales tax. And if you're selling to the public in California, you must charge sales tax. Mm-hmm. If you sell to wholesalers in California, you don't have to charge sales tax. And I'm assuming that you are selling a product and not a service, because services are not taxable.
Especially on eBay.
Especially on eBay.
It's hard to sell a service on eBay.
Yeah, I guess it is hard to sell service on eBay, right? And if you're going to be selling to a wholesaler, make sure they have a resale license. You may want to get a copy of that, because they could just give you any number and say it's theirs. Mm-hmm. And last is that if you're selling out of state, you don't usually have to collect sales tax, because if you're selling like to a product in Nevada, it's not considered a California sale or a Nevada sale. It's one of those gray areas.
Yeah, because the internet doesn't count for anything. They sort of haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, there's always talk in Washington about making a national sales tax, you know, which would really goof up everybody, states and everything. Because you know, you have compounded taxes like you do in gasoline. You'd have federal taxes and state taxes if they did that, if they went that way.
Yeah.
That would be a mess.
Well, that's all we have for this week. Tune in next week as we continue in Glendale, Arizona, by going a couple of blocks away to the Desert Rose, a desert Chuck E. Cheese for the whole family, as they describe it.
Yes, it is wonderful. And it has a steakhouse connected to it.
That's great. And roses. Until then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get in your business, no matter where it is.
Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.